The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Tonight I wanted to see what you have to ask, you know, so what your questions are. So I didn't prepare a topic to speak about. So I'm open to any kind of questions, whether it's about your meditation, you know, maybe about your formal meditation practice, something that happened here in this meditation, or something that happens in your regular meditation practice, or, you know, whether it's in your formal practice or in your daily life, working with being mindful in your daily life, something that you're working with, a particular situation or something that seems a bit challenging, or maybe a particular kind of habitual pattern in your mind that you'd like to have some elaboration on how to explore or work with mindfulness, or it could just be a Dharma topic, you know, like, so what is this about concentration? Or you talk a lot about craving and wanting being the cause of suffering. What does that mean? So just whatever kind of topics or things you might have questions about. What I like to do with these evenings is to take several questions just to start, because sometimes the questions can have interesting connections and they can feed into each other. So we'll just open it to you at first for questions, and I'll just take two or three questions. I'll write them down, or maybe three or four. I'll take three or four questions and I'll write them down and then respond. And then, you know, sometimes it depends on how much I talk, but sometimes three or four questions might all be we get to, but if we get through those, then we can see, are there other questions that have arisen based on those? So, questions. What are your questions tonight? Yeah, great.
So, I'm sitting in a group sitting after a very long time. So, there's definitely more energy, and I like sitting in a group, and I forgot, like, what that energy was like. At first, I didn't notice it. I was just trying to listen to your guidance about getting into the focusing and position, but then I couldn't help realizing that there's
just being in the room, yes. There's more energy, yeah.
So even without opening my eyes and just listening to your voice and the sounds and everything, it's very different from sitting alone. So there's this relational thing, and I'm not quite sure how to focus with that, how to...
So was it kind of, did it feel distracting that there was that, or did it feel supportive?
It was definitely supportive at first, but then I think I was trying to understand what this was. It was very confusing at some point.
So kind of like how to work with that?
Yes.
Yeah, okay,
yeah,
great.
I didn't know.
Okay, great, thank you. Other questions? Yeah, behind.
Hello. I'm a little bit new to this, and so I was hoping for some guidance on kind of the difference between being present and kind of feeling your breath, and then like thinking about breathing, and then kind of what, if you have any advice in that area, and then just like any advice around like visualizations, like so if you're visualizing your breath and things like that, is that then thinking about your breath or is that being present? So I'm just having, I don't know, these might be basic questions.
Okay. Great, thank you. Other questions? Yeah, great.
Thank you. I guess over the years of sporadic mindfulness practice, one thing I've observed is that I've become more and more what you'd call easily entertained by means of mindfulness.
Oh, okay.
It's to say I'll be content and even enjoy mundane situations. In a broader sense, though, I have found that it creates something of a conflict with the expectations that were set up for me from my upbringing, long-term ambitions, things related to careers, etc. I guess I see them as abstractions that stretch out in time that don't have much to do with the present. And clearly, there's some middle way between simply being enwreathed in the current experience and being utterly dedicated to striving for something 30 years out. But
yeah,
I'm curious as to your guidance on that middle path.
So the kind of a simple way to phrase the question, just to make sure I understand. So you see that being more mindful, it's like, you know, being in the present moment is pretty happy making. You're pretty content there. And so how does that play with planning and having aims and goals in life, that kind of thing? Or is there something more?
That sounds like a good start.
Okay. Okay, maybe one more. If there's one more.
I thought it was very helpful last week when you spoke about what is the easiest thing to be mindful of. That was really very nice.
That's not exactly a question, but is there a question in there? Just a
no. It's a. It's a.
It was just a comment.
It's a comment.
Okay. Thank you. It does kind of tie into some of the things I was going to say, but yeah. So, any other questions? Okay. Well, I'll start with these. So I think I'll start with the second question, the difference between being present and feeling experience and thinking about experience. And I think part of it is, what is mindfulness? You know, what is that? Is thinking about experience mindfulness? So, you know, I think let's just start with a little bit of a definition of mindfulness. And there's different ways to think about what mindfulness is. In some ways, we can just think about it as being aware in the present moment of what's happening while it's happening, so that knowing what's happening in the present moment. And yet, that's not quite enough because you might, for instance, meet somebody on the street who's expressing anger, and you might go up to them and say, "Hey, do you know that you're angry? Are you aware that you're angry?" And they would go, "Yeah," you know, like, duh. And yet that kind of awareness is not mindful awareness. You know, they are aware of it, but there's a perspective that goes along with mindfulness, that goes along with this kind of practice that we're doing. There's a perspective that orients us towards being curious about the experience that's happening as an experience that's happening. And so that person on the street that's angry, for instance, is not curious about, well, oh, there's anger arising. What is this experience of anger? They are engaged in that anger and are acting on that anger. And so they're actually fueling the anger. And so that is not the kind of mindfulness we're talking about. And likewise, there's another kind of example or scenario of a thief in a house who's very present and aware, feeling every single sensation, you know, aware of every movement that they're making, to be so quiet in moving through the house. And so in some ways, very mindful, very aware of what they are doing, but the whole motivation for what they're doing is to steal. And so again, it's not the curiosity about what is it like to take this step. It is the purpose of I want to be quiet in order to take something. I want to steal. So those kinds of that kind of awareness is not what we're aiming for. So there's this kind of the sense of being present in the present moment, which the basic understanding of mindfulness is a connection with knowing the experience while it's happening. And so the difference between knowing the experience versus thinking about it, which was part of the question, you know, when you're thinking about it, there can be some awareness of it happening in the present moment. So like, yep, I'm breathing in. Yes, I'm breathing out. So that's kind of heading in the direction, I'd say, of mindfulness. I encourage that in the guided meditation. You're breathing in, know that you're breathing in. Breathing out, know that you're breathing out. So it can be very simple, the mindfulness. And as we start to land with that simplicity, even if there's a little bit of thinking in the mind around that, as long as there's the curiosity of, well, what is this experience of breathing? It's not just kind of thinking about it in a rote way, but actually an interest in connecting to the experience, then you're headed in that direction. You're headed in the direction of mindfulness. And even the use of visualizations, sometimes that happens naturally even. You know, I've had experiences where the breath begins to feel like a, you know, a wave or something, and it creates an image in the mind of a wave, and that doesn't have to be that you're not mindful. It might be that you get more interested in the image than the experience itself, in which case what you're doing there is paying attention to the thought rather than the breath itself. So the experience is, we are interested in connecting with the experience, but we can use thought to kind of aim us in that direction. But the key piece really is aiming towards an interest in the experience in the present moment. What is this experience of being a human being that's breathing? If you're using thought to help you with that, that's fine. You know, and let's pick another experience. So, frustration. So frustration is arising in the present moment. If you are interested in knowing that experience of frustration, being present with that experience of frustration, there may be some thoughts in the mind that are kind of acknowledging that, yeah, this is frustration. I know that frustration is happening right now. That is maybe supporting you to stay connected to that experience. Or you might be thinking about the frustration. You might be thinking about who you're frustrated with and all of that. And that would not be being mindful of it. And so I hope this kind of begins to distinguish, you know, it's essentially, where is the interest? Is the interest in being with the experience? Or is it interested in kind of following the, so like with frustration, is it an interest in following the thread of the frustration and being frustrated? So there's a huge difference between being aware of something like an emotion of frustration and being frustrated. It's a vast difference in those two. And as we begin to understand that difference, what mindfulness is there, we begin to understand that difference, we see that being frustrated actually is painful, and that being aware that we're frustrated, there can be some space with that. So our system kind of begins to give us feedback that this kind of awareness, this kind of mindfulness is actually helpful. So that So it's a really important question, especially at the beginning of our practice, to begin to understand what mindfulness is. That it, you know, without a little more a kind of in-depth conversation, I can't know whether the thoughts that you're having are in the direction of supporting the mindfulness or not. But it's in all likelihood, it sounds like some of what you're, especially if there's visualizations about what the experience of the breath kind of feels like, you know, that's probably in the direction of being mindful of it. And then there's other things going on at the same time. You know, so you have the feeling of the breath, and then the realization or the knowing that you're breathing, and then the kind of acknowledgement, yeah, breathing's happening, or maybe the image of the way it feels. So those things can happen at the same time that you're feeling the breath, and we don't have to try to not have those things happen while we're staying present. It's kind of like that notion I offered in the guided meditation of like just knowing the breathing in the middle, and then that can begin to illuminate other things happening around it. Other thoughts, other body sensations, sounds also happening at the same time that you are knowing that. So, visualizations actually sometimes just happen. If you're consciously creating a visualization, I would say that's a different form of meditation. There are forms of meditation that use visualizations consciously. We don't tend to do that here, but we don't push things away. In mindfulness practice, actually, we're curious about just whatever happens. But we are curious about it as something that is happening in the present moment. So if you're noticing that while you're breathing, that there are thoughts happening, then you don't have to try to stop the thinking, but you can recognize, okay, well, there's the breathing happening, and there are these thoughts that are also happening. You can just know that they're happening at the same time. So there's a lot in that question, but I think I'll stop there for now. And then, you know, the question about sitting in a group and getting more energy, you know, that's a pretty common experience, you know, that sitting in a group can be supportive, can create the conditions to be able to land in the present moment a little more easily. But it can create a different experience potentially. You know, you said that you hadn't been sitting in a group, and so potentially if you've been sitting at home alone, there's a kind of familiar experience that happens there. And this experience feels different. And so sometimes when we land with a different kind of experience, it does get a little confusing. It's like, oh, how do I deal with this? Or, wow, there's energy here. Isn't it supposed to get really calm when I meditate? So there can be some confusion about how to work with that. But what Lewis said, I think, is an interesting pointer to this, is with mindfulness practice. So this brings in a little bit of a difference between mindfulness practice and concentration practice. But with mindfulness practice, we are exploring just being with whatever is here in this moment. We're not necessarily trying to stay with the breath. We can use the breath to help us settle or get connected for a little while. But with mindfulness practice, the ultimate aim, is to be able to meet and become aware of whatever is happening. Sound, body sensation, energy in the body. And so the practice broadens to be able to include all of our experience. And so when we land in a situation that feels a little different or unfamiliar, sometimes a good question can be, okay, so this is an unfamiliar experience, or wow, there's energy in the body. And that question of, well, what's the easiest thing to be with right now? What's the most obvious kind of thing that's happening right now? And the kind of receptive stance to that, of like, okay, well, there's a feeling of maybe vibration in the body, or just kind of an energetic kind of whole body sensation. We can just know that. So, you know, if it felt like that was stronger, essentially, than something you usually paid attention to, like the breath. You don't have to fight to stay with the breath. But just like, oh, this is, okay, this is what's obvious here. And this actually, maybe that is a little bit of an easier place to pay attention. Although one thing I will say about something like energy in the body, and I don't know if this was the case for you, but you know, an energetic experience through the field of the body, sometimes it's, I don't know, it feels like a kind of an amorphous kind of experience. It's not very, like, you can't really land on, what's this? That's it? Okay, that's part of the question.
That energy part, I couldn't focus on it. I wanted to know what it was,
okay, great.
But I couldn't
land
on it.
So that's a great place to begin to explore. So it is a little unfamiliar in terms of how to be with something like that. So you'd said that, you know, the breath was getting calmer, and yet then you were starting to notice this energy, but you didn't. It's like, well, how do I know this? I can't land on it.
Yeah, I was curious. I thought, okay, maybe it's excitement, but if I was excited, the breathing wouldn't subside. Everything was calm, and checking my attitude was fine.
Okay.
But there was some...
Yeah, great. So
I just didn't know what
there was,
it was.
It was like this. Something didn't compute in your mind in a way.
I didn't know what it was.
And yet what you describe is a very familiar experience to me from meditation, where there is a calming of the breath, and the mind is calming down. And essentially what starts to happen there is that subtler kinds of experience become more available to be known. And that includes the energetic experience of the body, almost a whole body kind of vibration experience. And it's also, you know, it's a less precise experience often. You know, you can't like say, okay, well, I'm going to focus on this little spot, because then it almost seems to disappear. But there's a sense you can kind of know it in the large. And so, you know, just I'll give you some analogies about to help you see that the mind can know this kind of broader experience for in familiar ways. So I'll give you two examples. So at night, on a dark night without the moon, sometimes if it's cloudless and, you know, you're not, there's not too much in the way of light pollution, you can see the Milky Way. And, you know, you can see the individual, you know, stars and things. You can see, you could focus on, you know, particular stars or planets, or maybe even occasionally see a satellite going across. And that's like being able to land. You're just like, oh, yeah, I can see that star. And you can look over, oh, I can see that star. Or you might even be able to see that little cluster, like the Pleiades, you know. So there's like things that we can identify, and we like identifying. You know, we like the identification of things. It's like, okay, that thing, that thing, that thing. But then we can kind of relax back and take in the Milky Way, which isn't a precise thing so much. It's much more of a wash in the sky. And so that's kind of the experience, is more that it's a wash, this energetic kind of vibratory experience is a wash in the body. It's a broader experience. It's not so amenable to trying to focus down on it. Like if you focus down into the Milky Way, it's like it's much more kind of relaxing back that you get to see the broadness of it. And so that's one example of, you know, in the visual field, how you can relax back and get a broad kind of more panoramic view of something. And then another one in the kind of the touch sense realm is, you know, when we're out in the outside and it starts to rain, we can feel the specific points of raindrops on our skin. So again, that's specific sensations, and that's easy to know. And then there's also times when we might walk outside and notice the difference at times from day to day or particular time of year to time of year between a humid day and a dry day. And again, that's a more broad kind of experience. It's, you don't know it from one little spot on the skin. It's a broader kind of thing. And so we know how to do this kind of broad awareness in some areas of our lives. But this touching into the ability to meet the broader experience, the less, more diffuse experience in our meditation practice, often takes a little bit of cultivation. It takes some time and a little bit of encouragement that there is a different way to pay attention. And a lot of it has to do with relaxation and not looking for something precise. So that's an important piece. It's like, so when you're meditating, it's like, oh, what is this experience of vibration in the whole body? And just like settling back. And sometimes if you just relax, it may just be the easiest thing to know. You know, if you're not looking for something, see, you'd say that the direction of aiming the attention at something makes it harder to see these diffuse things. So it's much more, can I just settle back and see what's kind of obvious there? And sometimes it just pops in and it's like, oh, that's what it is. So it's a different way of attending than the focused attention. And what I will say is that I'm glad you asked this question, because it's an important area in our practice to learn how to explore that kind of non-focused attention. There's a lot of meditative experiences, things that happen to us in meditation that have this flavor, especially as the mind starts to settle and begins to calm down. This kind of more broad experience. It might be this experience of energy. It might be just the experience of calm itself, a kind of quietude or spaciousness. These things also can be known, and we don't have to go looking for something. You know, it's like we can know the space. Another analogy, this is another good one, like in the night, you know, we can see the stars, we can see the Milky Way, but we can also kind of tune into the sky, the deep velvety blackness of the sky. We can tune into that too. And so that's sometimes like the spaciousness that happens. We can tune into that. And there can be things that are kind of popping into that spaciousness, but we're more attuned to the background than the foreground objects. So it's a little bit of an exploration, and I would just encourage a holding of the possibility of meeting these more unfamiliar kinds of experiences. Yeah, thank you. And then this, the question about, you know, as we settle in and we get more, you know, kind of happy with just being in the present moment. this question of what, you know, how does it work that we like land in the present moment, and yet, you know, what about planning? What about, you know, does planning take me out of the present moment? How can I even think about goals for my life and be present in the present moment? Is that a piece too of the question? Yeah. So this is a place in daily life practice, I think, where one of my teachers offers a kind of a daily life tool, let's say, of kind of holding both the context in which we're acting and being aware at the same time. So he calls it 50-50 mindfulness, 50% of the attention knowing what we're doing and 50% of the attention on how we are with that content. You know, it is possible to think And oh, you're thinking, although, you know, in meditation, so this is a big question. Let's see, where do I go in? In meditation, we often reflect on or think about, oh, planning is happening, planning is arising in the present moment, and we don't engage with the content. And so we don't gain the skill so much about connecting our mindfulness practice and our spiritual life to content. Because we, you know, have this perspective in the sitting practice of more bare attention. And, you know, it's like, well, this is just a thought. I can know that's a thought. And when we know that, it tends to let go, and we're just left with, you know, body sensations and sounds. And it gets quite delightful, actually. And this is a form of concentration that happens. But that is not necessarily the appropriate way to engage in our lives. And yet we can be mindful. So this 50-50 mindfulness that my teacher Sayadaw Utejaniya brings up is a kind of a way in to bring the tools and the skills of engagement with our practice and our spiritual life and our aims and our intentions around our spiritual life right into our life. It brings the and I actually think that the Eightfold Path includes this as well. When I look at the Eightfold Path, wise view, wise intention, the first place that they're encouraged to be connected with is our relationships with other people, you know, to engage in ways that don't lead to harm. But we can expand on that to bring our intention in connecting with content to see, you know, in a way we start to see, okay, well, how does this content affect me? And we can begin to recognize when we might have a little bit of a, you know, some of our kind of warning signs or some of our sense of, as we settle into our mindfulness practice, we gain kind of an understanding of what is helpful and what is not helpful in terms of being present. We understand certain mind states are not so helpful: frustration, anger, irritation, confusion. You know, we get the sense of them. We get the feeling of those being kind of tight and constricted. And so as we learn that in our sitting practice, then as we begin to engage with this 50-50 mindfulness in daily life, we can see, well, this content's affecting me in this way. This content makes me feel confused or anxious, or this content makes me feel connected and engaged. So we use that learning and understanding and wisdom that we've gained in our meditation practice to support us with kind of navigating the content of our lives. You know, the notion of 30-year-out plan, kind of, you know, that kind of notion really thinking your life out. I mean, there's nothing inherently in conflict of that with the practice, as long as you are engaging with the, you know, kind of recognizing, it's like we, you know, it's kind of like we have this aspiration. It's not so much that word aspiration, I think, may be more useful than goal. You know, because with a goal, sometimes we kind of put it out there, we hook to it, and there can be the craving and clinging in that direction, and maybe some tightness and efforting there. And so that's the question: is are we engaging in that direction with tightness, with craving, with fear, with anxiety? And if that's going on, it's not necessarily that the direction is bad, but the way we're engaging with the direction might not be the best way to engage. You know, that there's something extra going on in that engagement, and so that's worth looking at. That sense of the fear around, oh no, what happens if I don't get, if it doesn't unfold in this way, oh no, you know. And so we can have an aim, we can have an aspiration, and we can also kind of head in that direction with some degree of a heart that feels more responsive to the conditions as they unfold, more kind of in balance with, oh, I can, you know, oh, this happened? Okay, well, let's see. You know, I can go this way. So there's the work that we do in our sitting can help us to kind of get familiar with those experiences. But the place I really want to caution about is the kind of the tying together of, or the belief, I'd say, the belief that if I'm experiencing some kind of, you know, tightness or anxiety or fear or constriction around a particular direction, it means the whole direction is wrong or bad. I don't think that's what it means. I think it means more that there may be some kind of identification or some kind of, some kind of fear or something that's not been seen that you might be able to, you know, to see, you know, whether there's a piece in there of just extra, you know, because fear, you know, fear, for instance, has components of wanting safety. You know, so even just the mind state of fear, you know, often we think of these things as holy, you know, it's like that's a problem, that's a state of mind that's not helpful for my life, so I'm going to be mindful of it, but there's in the back of our mind the agenda, I need to be mindful of it so that it will go away. And in my exploration of these reactive emotions, you know, I see that they're like a weaving. They're a tangle, actually. I'd call it more of a tangle. They're a tangle of in fear, for example, and we could do this with any reactive emotion. We can kind of find the threads from the various places that are getting tangled. With fear, there's often a thread from the wish for safety, the wish for security. And then that kind of gets tangled up with the impermanent, unreliable nature of experience. And so we have, you know, wish for safety, unreliable experience, fear kind of results. But the fear itself is kind of a reaction or an addition to those truths, you know, the truth of the unreliable, the truth of the impermanent, and the deep wish for safety. I mean, that's a wholesome wish, the wish for safety. It's metta. It's very natural human wish, and this is a place too where perhaps we misunderstand, you know, that, you know, if in fact things are unreliable, then I shouldn't want to feel safe. You know, I've had that in my own mind at times, and I've certainly talked to people that in you know, saying to themselves, "Well, fear. Okay, well, you know, there's this wish to be safe, but you know, that's just illusion because I know everything's unreliable." It's kind of denying that wish for safety, and that wish for safety is so deep in our being that kind of very natural movement for well-being for ourselves and others, it's not going to go away. It's not that kind of movement of saying, oh, I shouldn't want to feel safe, is almost trying to repress something that's so deep. And so the even within a single emotion like fear, there are these mixtures of things that are wholesome and beautiful. There's the wish for safety, which is a wholesome wish, and then there's the recognition of unreliable, which is a truth, and then there's this kind of tied up in knots about these two cannot coexist simultaneously. Either I'm doing something wrong, the universe is doing something wrong. You know, so there's a resistance to it, and it's a natural resistance. You're not alone in this kind of resistance. And so what our minds need to start to do is to recognize they can coexist simultaneously, these two. And then that holding that with mindfulness can begin to allow these threads to untangle, and then there becomes more of a weave of this experience of unreliable and wanting to be safe. And there's not a demand that things kind of unfold in a particular way. And so what I'm pointing to here is through a specific example around fear, is that it's not that fear is wholly bad. You know, it's like I used to feel like, you know, my anger was something that it was like a tumor and I needed to just take a scalpel and like cut around it and get rid of it. But that doesn't work, because inside that anger was also a kind of an acknowledgement of a feeling of, you know, the sense of wanting to be seen and appreciated. And so, you know, that's a place of just very natural metta, wanting connection, wanting relationship. And so the beginning to recognize that in the example of, okay, so there's this aim or direction 30 years out, and some kind of tightening that goes along with that, and that doesn't feel compatible. It may just be the tightening that is in there, and it's not that the whole thing is unskillful. That tightening is connected with some particular thread of often some kind of wish for safety, happiness, health, connection, care, and a kind of the thread of kind of fear that it's not going to be able to play out in the way that I'd like it to. Not necessarily that the direction is a problem, but just the kind of tightening in the mind. And so it's really important not to conflate the sense of there being a tightening around a particular direction with it meaning that the direction is a problem. So that's an important kind of recognition. So I would really encourage the exploration around the what in this 50-50 mindfulness. So here's the experience, the content of this idea, this aim, this direction, and what's the relationship to that? Maybe it fluctuates. Excitement and interest and delight and joy and fear. It's not going to work out. And that's something to know too. So that, you know, kind of look at the various flavors that are in the relationship to the content, and that can give you kind of direction to kind of help you navigate, well, is this actually a good direction? You know, sometimes we might find that an aim or direction that we have, it's like, wow, you know, the whole reason for that aim and direction is because I've had the voice of my parents in my head for 20 years, and that's the direction they want me to go. It's not really my direction. And then there's a whole other thing to look at there, like fear about not doing what your parents want you to do. I mean, I don't know if this is at all relevant, but it's just another example of how it might play out, that you start to see the motivations and the kind of the deeper currents that are connected with the content. And so, you know, it's really important not to feel like we cannot be mindful of content. We can know there's content and know how we are with that content. And that's a really big place of practice in daily life. You know, we can explore it in simple ways, like, you know, reading the news. You know, it's like, okay, read a headline. Okay, how does that make me feel? So that we begin to cultivate that skill of content and awareness of how does it resonate? And what's happening there? So you want to... Now, that's all those questions. So is there anything more you want to say in that, or questions to follow on?
Well, that addressed it very well, so thank you for that. I guess one interesting aside is when you kind of bounce off of those expectations, and I sometimes feel that I've bounced off too far in the opposite direction as well.
Yeah.
And so an alternate fear
almost
arises.
Almost like... Yeah, I'm not going to do that because that's what they want, kind of. Yeah.
Perhaps not even that, but I find myself just wanting to be in nature and ski sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And I'm perfectly content to think about that. And perhaps it's not a reactive reaction to the other end of it, which is some successful engineering career or whatever. But kind of a different fear arises that maybe I should feel more motivated in the culturally accepted sense or in a direction that's generally viewed to be productive. So that's kind of the second part of it in my mind.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, I think that one is worth kind of lingering with. Somebody had this frame for becoming a Buddhist practitioner that it's a downwardly mobile experience. Partly because we value different things than the culture. And, you know, this is, the Buddha used the analogy of swimming against the stream with his practice. And so we are finding that the ways in which, and this is, it's not a mistake, actually. I mean, the ways in which the culture kind of aims us is the direction of craving, largely. And so as we step into this practice more and more, we do let go of a lot of those more cultural norms. And it feels odd, especially at the beginning. It feels odd and feels like, is there something wrong with me? But I would just keep that in mind. Does it feel like the wanting to, you know, spend time in nature, does it feel like you're avoiding something? Or does it feel like you're stepping into something? You know, so again, being with the content of what you're doing, does it feel nourishing and expanding? Or does it feel like, yeah, I don't want to deal with that? I mean, is there some way in which it's kind of like there's a delusion that's putting something aside? You know, we do have to, in our lives, you know, we have to support ourselves as lay people. You know, we need our jobs, we need our livelihood. This downwardly mobile thing is, it's actually fine if you are willing and curious about simplifying your life. Which is what I've done. You know, it's like there's a lot more simplicity in my life and a lot more happiness with that simplicity. So, you know, just again, to see if you're avoiding things and find yourself homeless, that probably isn't a direction. I mean, that's not being realistic about the situation. So, but there may not, you may not need the high powered engineering career to have a wonderful life. So, you know, there's a whole kind of cultural aim. It feels especially strong in Silicon Valley around, you know, having your life be kind of defined by and shaped by your work. So that's not like the first thing people ask, you know, what do you do? It's like, and then there's the piece around, you know, it's kind of like the some of the companies in the Silicon Valley also have this kind of ethic in a way of the company becomes the most important thing. And, you know, as soon as you start looking into your experience, you realize there's a lot more that's important than writing graphics software and documenting it, which is what I did for a long time. so that you begin to recognize the kind of views that are embedded in our culture have a lot of delusion in them. And so there's a reality check that goes along with this. And yet there's also the possibility that yeah, there is some delusion. It's like, oh yeah, I really like being in the present moment. I'll just spend all my time in nature. And then we discover we've gone through our savings and we have nowhere to live. So, you know, it's useful to keep a kind of a, again, the contextual, keep the context, understand the whole context. And there are times when we may have to make choices that, you know, feel like there wouldn't be what we'd want to make. At a certain point in my life, I chose, there was a point in my life where I was navigating wanting to sit more retreats and spend more time with the meditation. And it was like, I was a contractor, a contract technical writer at that point. And when I would go into work, I felt like this is taking time away from what I want to do. And I resented it. And so I was exploring that and looking at that and, you know, kind of just bringing that into my practice. And at some point there was a kind of a shift in my mind or a recognition, you know, this work, you know, it's kind of neutral work. It's, you know, it's neither, you know, really expanding the welfare or taking away from the welfare of human beings. It can be used to expand the welfare. It can also be used to do other things. But I saw that the work itself was neutral, but it was creating the conditions for me to be able to go on retreat and support myself. So there was a kind of I just turned around my whole connection with the livelihood. It's like, oh, I do this livelihood. I'm choosing this. I'm choosing to do this so that I can support myself for other reasons. So that really turned the whole notion of, you know, Silicon Valley on its head, which is, you know, you do this because you believe in the mission of the company. It's like, I didn't believe in the mission of the company. I was happy to do a really good job. But my mission was something else. I didn't tell them that. I don't think they ever knew. Well, maybe they did. I don't know. I did talk about meditating a lot. But, you know, that kind of sense of what is the reason why I'm choosing to do this? It may not be the most, you know, the thing that we think is the most connected with what our direction is. But it's on the path, and it's perhaps the most, suitable thing to do. And so this is a teaching the Buddha offered around, he called it clear comprehension, that, you know, there's what is our aim and purpose, and then is what we're doing suitable to support that aim and purpose. And it may not be that we think it is the most suitable, but it is it is suitable in terms of what's available in our lives in this moment. And so that's another kind of reflection to look at there. So that's our time. Thank you for the questions.